It's kind of one of those things. It's like the duck. You know, you see a duck in the water, right? The duck looks like it's cool, but the duck's freaking working hard under the water. Wow, working hard. That's how our place is. We look cool, but we're working hard.
Dr. F. Scott Field. Boom, my man. How's the fam doing?
Doing good. It's been, kind of a bumpy ride, but my mother-in-law had her double mastectomy done back in October. December, she healed up, got the drains out. Oncologist said that the lymph nodes were negative, so that's good. But it was such an aggressive form of cancer. They want to put her on chemo anyway. And she's kind of, obviously she's against that, which I completely understand. But she's trying to decide whether to do like the actual treatment or to go on a pill for 5 years. Okay. And that's kind of where we're at now. They're trying to make that decision this week.
With your experience in healthcare, have you been advocating for one way or the other for treatment?
I personally, I don't like either one of them, but I think the treatment is kind of shorter and sweeter. Just sucks. Go through it, get it done, and just be done with it. Yep. You know, 5 years to be on a medication is pretty expensive. It's pretty costly. It's not very time efficient, and who knows how you're going to respond to it. So they're both pretty miserable. You know, I mean, I don't think there's a right answer on that one. It's kind of a personal feeling, I guess you get, but I've been trying to stay clear of it because it's not my fight. You know, I'm just here for support.
Yep. We're rooting for.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
And in other news, you do have a lot of other big things in the works, right?
Yeah, man. It's going to be great. Shit, man.
For people that don't know, excuse me, what the PT Educator website has to offer, what's your pitch to them? What's your elevator description of what it is?
Yeah, so it started about 3 years ago. And I was just writing a blog every day, every weekday. And it was just general health and wellness education. It was trying to educate the public to all things, you know, diagnoses, treatments, disease processes. And it was trying to put it in layman's terms so that, you know, there was an element of healthcare literacy there. And I did it every weekday. It was just something I saw in the clinic that day or something that came up in conversation that week or an article I was reading or whatever it may be. And it was really just to push myself and see if I could stay consistent with the blog and really try to figure out, you know, if I could, you know, use my English background and my BA in English to write still, you know, I wanted to see if the skills were still there.
You still got it.
Yeah. So, I basically have pivoted that now. Over the last 3 or 4 years, I've been working a lot within education and trying to make education better. Brandon Pone and myself started the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast, which ironically enough, you were on. And then, we kind of lost the tapes somehow. They were destroyed in the...
That's right, yeah.
In the Southgate episode.
Some controversy, man. Yeah.
So I don't know if those will ever see the light of day, to be honest with you. We're still searching for those files. But
I think the powers that be must have played a role in just deleting them.
You might be right. But so the podcast has been great because it's opened my eyes to, I was very on the fence about academia. You know, I had a doctorate in physical therapy and a doctorate in education, and I didn't want to use either one traditionally. So I was really on the fence, but the podcast has really kind of brought me back into the world of academia and showed me that, you know, you can make it better. You can teach, you can affect the next upcoming rounds of therapists to be. You know, you can still mold young minds in ways that you see fit. It's just about finding the right fit for you and finding the right university.
Yeah, I think that was the most interesting thing, talking to you, you and Brandon, and just seeing you guys grow the HET podcast. And I remember from that, the Lost Tapes episode, of having this feeling of like, oh, these guys are in academia, but they are critiquing the hell out of it, to now it's, you've had so many people from that world on the show, and how has that changed your mindset? You gave us a little bit, but just from talking to that many people in the world, do you feel like you're more a part of it, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I've only taught adjunct a little bit here and there as of right now. So, you know, I'm only just dipping my toes in the water, so to speak. But I think, you know, talking to all these experts in academia and seeing their side of the coin and their point of view definitely has opened up my eyes to some of the limitations that they're up against and, you know, some of the bureaucratic BS that goes on and the red tape and the hoops they have to jump through and, you know, projects and things that get thrown at them that are not just your everyday show up and teach kind of stuff, you know? So it's been interesting. I think some of the downside and the negative side of education and academia that we've seen has been addressed, or is at least people are trying to address it. And I think that's really been helpful. I think that kind of showed me that, you know, there are people out there fighting the good fight, and you just got to find your niche and your avenue within academia and go for it, you know? So I think teaching is definitely on my horizon. It's on my radar. I don't know if it'll be a full-time gig ever, but it's definitely out there, and I'm willing to give it a try, you know? And I think I had to. I think I had to go through that growing process and interview these hundreds of experts in the world of academia to really get a true grasp on where my, you know, specialty and expertise may fit.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, it's not fair for me, who's only taught a few semesters of adjunct work, come in and say, oh, you're doing it all wrong, let me show you the way. You know, we never, Brandon and I never felt that way. We just felt like our experiences were average at best. Maybe they could be better. We don't know how to make them better, but let's try to ask the experts and find out, you know?
Yeah. I'm kind of about to enter this world. Actually, this weekend for the Flex program at USA, I'll be a lab assistant for one of the labs. So I'll kind of...
Great start, man.
Yeah.
It's a perfect way to kind of start feeling the waters a little and see if it's a good fit for you.
For sure. It's going to be really weird being on the other side of it.
Yeah. I mean... You got to start somewhere, right? I mean,
that's a great
place to start. And I think you'll get a feel right off the bat if that's something that you really want to do. And the great thing about education, and one of the kind of pivots that I've made with the podcast, well, not only the podcast, but my blog, is, you know, we're trying to figure out different avenues where you can still be an educator. You don't have to necessarily go into academia, right? You could teach continuing education units. You could do business coaching and mentoring, right?
Yeah.
You could teach, like you said, lab instructor. You could do guest lectures, even just one-offs, you know, and you could do guest lectures, you know, via Zoom nowadays. Technology's made things a lot easier. So there's just so many avenues out there. And that's been really eye-opening too, and reassuring to know that an extra $40,000 worth of debt didn't just go to, you know, in vain.
Yeah.
If I choose to educate in different ways, which I am trying to do. So.
And can you kind of give a brief overview of the degrees and certifications you've had since getting your license for PT?
Yeah. So my story is not the straight and narrow path, right? I mean, I've talked about this a lot on our podcast, but I started out as an English major at Wake Forest. And, you know, because I placed out of freshman English two classes, I was like done by first semester senior year.
Wow. Humble brag.
Yeah. I had a ton of free time. So my second semester senior year, I took golf, bowling, and intro to Japan and coasted, you know.
Yeah.
But I volunteered at the hospital. They put me in the PT department and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. You know, I need to see how I get a job doing this. I could play with patients all day and bat some balloons around. This is great. You know?
Yeah. That's all it is.
And then I looked at the prereqs and I was like, nope, don't have that one. Nope, don't have that one. Nope, don't have that one either. All right, great. So I had to take a whole nother year of math and science once I graduated Wake Forest there. I went to Greensboro because it was state school and I was in state at that point. And then I got into East Carolina University, which was a master's program at the time. And I started there, and they offered the third-year transitional doctorate for our class and the class below us before they transitioned into a full-on DPT. So I was like, yeah, you know, I'll stick around for that third year and try to get that transitional doctorate. That seems like the way the profession's going. And looking back at the time, my dad was having some health problems, and he didn't, you know, he wasn't faring too well. So I was back and forth a lot between North and South Carolina when they were in Charleston at the time. And I ended up, you know, not passing my boards the first couple of times. And that just put the pressure on me for that third year, because I had a master's. I graduated with a master's, but I didn't have a license yet. So I couldn't treat during the third year. And then my dad ended up getting sick and passing away. And he passed away at the hospital that I was working at as a tech. And I had to go past the room where he passed away every day to clock in and go to work. And that really started wearing on me after a while, you know. So I didn't even know if I wanted to be a PT at that point. So the window of opportunity closed on the transitional doctorate. And I started having second guesses around whether or not I should finish and get my, you know, license and all. And I ended up getting it eventually. Took me a second year, but eventually I was able to get it. Then I just traveled for a year. And while I was traveling, I started the transitional doctorate again at St. Augustine. Just because I felt like it was the way that the profession was going. It made a lot of sense. And I started it. I might as well finish it. I felt like my dad would have wanted me to finish it out. And while I was in the transitional doctorate, the head of the EDD came over to me and asked, you know, hey, would you be interested in teaching ever? And I said, no, not really. You know, my dad was an English teacher. I went sat in on his classes. Those kids were dicks, man. I'm not doing that, you know.
Kids suck.
Yeah. But then I started thinking about it, you know, a couple of weeks later. And I was like, you know, if my hands give out, my back gives out, my knees give out or whatever, like, if I can't do this forever, manual therapy and stuff, maybe I'll just teach, you know, and use that as a fallback. So he had said that a couple of the classes from the DPT would overlap the EDD and make it a four-year program down to a three-year program. So I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. So I went in, I finished the EDD program eventually at St. Augustine as well. And so that's what I've been rocking with ever since, the master's into the transitional, into the EDD,
yeah,
kicking and screaming the whole way, fumbling and bumbling my way through the programs. But, you know, got those pieces of paper at the end of the day.
Boom. That's awesome. And you just graduated, what was that, one year ago?
December of 2018. So realistically, and this is kind of interesting, and this is why it's taken me so long to get PT Educator up and running the way I wanted it to. I'm technically really just a new grad, right? I'm a year out. I've been in school for 13 some odd years.
Yeah.
You know, pretty continuously for the most part. So, you know, the big thing for me was student loans. You know, I finally graduated after 13 years of school. I've got $140,000 worth of student loans, and they just started kicking in, and they're due now. So
yeah,
that's where PT Educator kind of came from. You know, we've heard time and time again, the biggest issue that our experts and our professors that we had on the podcast were finding was the cost of DPT programs. And they didn't necessarily have a good answer as to, you know, how to make that better. And I think we're finding that the debt to income ratio for PTs is getting worse and worse by the day.
It's not matching the rates of inflation, right?
No, I mean, it's pretty crummy, and it's a shame because it really is a great profession, right? And, you know, most of us got into healthcare in one way or another to help people, right? We care about people, so we want to do right by people. And it's, you know, if you can't make enough money to pay off the loans it took you to get the degree,
yeah,
people are going to start questioning whether or not that profession's worth it. And PT was continually in like Newsweek's top 10 jobs of the year,
New York Times,
professions of the year. And
the boomers are aging.
Yeah.
Like that was a big selling point that I've always heard, right?
Yeah. And it makes sense, right? From a population standpoint. And even if we look at population health, PTs are primed and ready to help that area out. There's a ton of jobs out there. That's not the issue at hand.
Yeah.
The issue at hand is finding the top paying job so that you can pay your loans back. And, you know, people shouldn't necessarily have to make those decisions on where they work based on their debt, you know, and their student loans.
Yeah.
So I just kind of got fed up with it. And I was like, all right, if this is what I truly am going to do, I love my profession. I love my career. It's a great profession. I haven't necessarily liked my jobs that I've been in, and I've taken them solely on student loan repayment programs and high paying jobs. And, you know, my wife's a type 1 diabetic. So at the end of the day, I'm going to need a 9-to-5 with really good benefits. It's the golden handcuff scenario, right? I'm going to need a job with benefits for the rest of my life. Now, my side hustles and my side passions and my passion projects have all been, you know, pretty good as well, but it'd be really nice to be able to do a lot more of those and a lot less of the 9-to-5. So that's been the new conquest, is to find a position that allows me the most amount of benefits with the least amount of hours having to be worked.
High value tasks, right? High dollar tasks.
Yeah. You got it. So I started taking a look at things that I could do to pay down my student loans quicker, because I take full responsibility for them. I mean, I knew what I was getting into for the task that I felt like I had to overcome after graduation. It was like, okay, you took on these loans, you know, they're yours now. It's your responsibility. So I was like, okay, I almost wanted to make a game out of it and gamify it a little bit, right? All right, $140,000. If I were to drop that down using the income-driven repayment plan that Joe Ranke at FitBucks had suggested, I'm not a student loan expert by any means. Mm-hmm. I just know Joe Ranke at FitBucks there does a great job of getting people organized in a matter that works for them in their specific situation.
Yeah.
And for me, it was the income-driven repayment plan. Drop them all down as low as I can. And it went from about $1,800 a month to $700 a month. So that was manageable.
Okay.
But then from there, I wanted to figure out how I could change that now $700 a month payment over 25 years down to 2 or 3 years. And, you know, it's just going to be big chunks, right? Large payments in big chunks. And as much as I would love to do that with my salary covers, you know, my living expenses, takes care of my family, food on the table, roof over our head, cars and stuff. And you know, there's a little bit extra at the end of the week, but not much, right? So you're not going to make any big chunks that way.
Right.
So I had to start thinking about some outside the box activities that I could do with my skill set that I already had as both a doctorate in physical therapy and a doctorate in education, a terminal degree, gone through research, done my dissertation, defended it. I have a huge skill set. And if you want to go back to college, even my writing, right? Being an English major helped as well. So I wanted to start looking at jobs that I could do on the side in my free time that would pay decent and at the same time would help pay off my student loans. These jobs were strictly dedicated to student loans. So I started looking at things like my blog and how I could monetize that. I started doing copywriting for not only my own mobile practice, which I started as a test, right, trial run. And it kind of blossomed into something that just stuck around, you know. Mm-hmm. I started doing digital marketing for my clinic and a couple other clinics as well for some friends of mine that I went to PT school with, and then a dentist that I ended up going to college with as well. And it just kind of grew from there. And all of a sudden, I started getting some digital marketing agency type work that was bringing in $3,000 to $5,000 a month contracts. And you put together a couple of those every month, and all of a sudden, those big chunk payments start coming in.
There you go.
So that's where this PT educator student debt eliminator really started, you know, and that's what I wrote the book about. And then I've got a master class off the back end of the book, if, you know, for people who want to work with me a little more exclusively and really personalize the business aspect of layering multiple revenue streams of income for their business. Because that's the subtitle, right? It's PT Educators Student Debt Eliminator, multiple revenue streams of income for, you know, healthcare academicians and clinicians. So it's the problem becomes when people start shouting about shiny object syndrome, right? And like,
that's tough.
Yeah. Oh, I think I can do that. Oh, I can do that. Oh, I want to do that. Oh, that looks cool. Let's do that. Like, you can't keep jumping the bandwagon. You can do all those things, but you've got to have a process and you've got to have a system in place to get one of them up and running before you jump train and get the next one up and running. And that's kind of what the book is all about. you know, it basically just shows people a methodical way to go about one at a time getting these streams of income and revenue up and running before they jump onto the next one that makes sense for their business. So it's just adding layers of revenue that makes sense for their business.
It's baking this big, beautiful cake.
Got it. Layer after layer.
Awesome. And, you know, to kind of go down a, I know we talked about, you know, some pitfalls, some darker sides. There is kind of a tough battle going on right now with PDGM. I know we've talked a little bit about this, and I definitely wanted to get your opinion on patient-driven grouping model?
Yep.
Yeah. And how that affects our landscape.
Yeah. So, I do home health from 9 to 5 currently. That's my ticket to benefits, essentially, right? The company I work for now has got phenomenal benefits. They're a little pricey for sure, which is a whole nother issue, but the benefits are there. They're good. They take care of my wife and her type 1 diabetes. So
awesome.
It is what it is, right? I play the game to get the benefits. I'm good with that. In home health, so far, we're about 2 weeks now into 2020. Our company hasn't been affected too much. Where there has been any firings, all my PTAs are still employed. They're doing very well. The one downside that I've seen is that nursing is kind of commanding the plans of care a little bit more, and they are kind of asking for 6 visits in and out. Go in, teach the patient or the patient's caregiver what needs to be done as far as a home exercise plan, and then get out.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be a little bit more education driven, and nursing's kind of using us a little bit more as a modality to educate.
Yeah.
I see patients for 4 different agencies, and 3 of which have basically said you'll get 6 visits, and then unless it's a joint replacement or a new stroke. Anything beyond that, we have to go in and justify it and ask for more and get it pre-approved. When the SNFs went through it a little bit earlier in the run, I guess it was late last year.
Yeah.
There was some more knee-jerk reactions. There were a lot more firings. PTAs just getting let go right then there. No warning sign or anything like that. You know, they just kind of said, all right, we can't afford you anymore. You're gone. Yeah. And that to me was miserable. That was a terrible way to handle it.
It happened overnight too.
Right. This has been coming down the pipeline for a while. We knew what was going to happen. If you kind of figured you weren't going to be able to employ X amount of, PTAs, maybe you should have given them a heads up. I felt like it was handled kind of crappy. This isn't a blanket statement, but I just saw some instances where that was kind of crummy.
Yeah.
Moving forward, it's not looking good. I mean, reimbursement is going down, right? Yeah. It's not going to go back up.
CMS is not looking favorably.
No.
On the PTA and reimbursement.
That's a fight that we can, take on again. But look, at the end of the day, right, let's look at the big picture here. I love my profession. I love what I do. I love being a physical therapist. What can you do as a physical therapist to combat against that? What can you do to recession safe yourself?
Mm-hmm. Right?
And I feel like people highly undervalue optionality.
Yeah.
Right. But in order to have that optionality, in order to have these opportunities, you've got to bust your tail and do a bunch of different things and learn a bunch of different skill sets that are going to bring value based off of your knowledge, based off of your experience. You know, and that's why the EDD is going to come in handy, because even if physical therapy falls off the face of the earth, I can still teach education at a university level. So I don't have to teach physical therapy. You know, I could, and I'd like to, but at the same time, I could just flat out teach education. So, you know, in hindsight, I don't know that I did this on purpose. I'd like to think that my subconscious maybe did. But the EDD was a pretty good path, you know, and yeah. I was worried about it for a long time, because I got to the dissertation. I was like, man, this sucks. I loved all the curricular work that I did and all the classes were amazing. The dissertation, not so much. That was not my bag of chips. So I thought, oh man, I made a huge mistake here. Like, what am I doing? I hate research. I'm not a good scientific writer. Or I thought I could be with an English background. That was not true. It's totally different writing style.
Uh-huh.
So I was worried there for a while, you know, but I gritted through it. I learned, got a lot of mentorship, and they pulled me across the finish line kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like I said, it's a pretty good move because we had Chad Cook on the HET podcast, and he was saying he highly valued EDDs because they are not only curriculum writers, they help fit the puzzle for how things should look in a program. They see the bigger picture of where things fit and why. So that kind of made me, you know, put me at ease a little bit and realized, you know, if he's able to see those kind of things, then I'm hoping other directors of programs will see those kind of things. But again, like I said, it's optionality. One of the options that I have is to fall back and teach at a university level, whether it be PT or whether it be education. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's just one of the many streams of revenue and streams of income that that I'm able to produce now because of optionality. Yeah.
And also on the PT Educator website, there's a revenue idea generator with about 100 ideas.
Yeah. So I sat down one night with a nice glass of whiskey and a and you know, thought
is being a distiller Trace, one of those?
Yeah. Thought of one of your boys, Trace, there and you know, thought back to our interview that we had done on his podcast. And you know, I just thought about it. I was like, look, all you have to do is connect point A to point B. All you have to do is connect your knowledge, you know, your experience and your skill set in healthcare and everything that you know, and connect it to point B, which is a general need out in the public or, you know, in some niche. Find a problem, show how you can solve it, and you can turn almost anything into a quote unquote PT job, right?
Yeah.
So I came up with a list of about 100 of them. Not all of them are directly healthcare related, but I would say good 75%, if not more, are healthcare related. Even to something like real estate and rental properties, right? Let's say you own a couple of condos in four or five big cities. You could rent those out only to medical students or only to PT students on rotation, you know?
Yeah.
And so you could kind of network your way into getting those rented like an Airbnb style just for medical students or just for people in healthcare, you know?
That's genius, man.
So again, like it's just showing, and it doesn't have to be that way, but I'm just showing you how, you know, healthcare could still be related to something as far out as real estate. Mm-hmm. So it's connecting point A to point B, utilizing your network and figuring out how to turn that job into another stream of revenue or a relatively passive stream of income. And so that's why I kind of started the vlogcast, right? Every week for the next 100 weeks, we're going to go through that list. PTEducator.com/100. You can get the list there. It's free. It's not a get rich quick scheme. It's just to get your mind flowing and the juices flowing and thinking about other options of revenue and other streams of income. Each week, we're going to go through somebody who's done that particular job and talked about how they turned it into like a side hustle or a side gig. Just to show you that, you know, people in healthcare are doing this stuff. It can be done. You can generate several streams of income by just thinking outside the box a little, mm-hmm. you know, and leveraging your skills and your experience. So yeah, that's what the vlogcast is all about. And that'll be a weekly show, which I'm pretty excited about. It's a 2-year program, obviously.
Yeah.
So we're on week 2 right now. Got a long way to go, but I'm excited about it, you know, and I've got some really good guests coming on. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Nice, man. What's the most ridiculous side hustle on that list, in your opinion?
Gosh. There's a lot of them, man. there's a lot of them. One of them, which I actually don't think I could do, but I want to some extent, try to give it a try, is voiceover actor.
Yes. Yes. Right? Yeah. You'd be good at that.
I just feel like, you know, if you had a weird distinct voice, you'd be good for like some sort of like cartoon or, you know, whatever. Yeah. I love that Geico commercial guy that comes on talking like the unsolved mystery guy, you know, like could 15% on your car help you? You know, like that. That
you got guy, the job, my friend.
Right? That guy's awesome. I love those kind of voices. I love the deep voice, like that guy that just comes in, like, you know, hey, baby, what's happening?
Yeah. You know? Ooh.
It's stuff like that. But like, if you do have a distinct voice, that could be, you know, a cool side gig that you apply for. I ran into somebody who was a nurse, and now she's doing voice acting like 90%.
What? Yeah. What?
I have to get her on the show, see if she'll come on and talk about it. But yeah, that one's awesome. A weird one. There's a couple other weird ones on there. But most of them, you know, can be done by healthcare professionals and have some sort of link to healthcare profession.
Yeah.
And using our knowledge and our skill set that we already have.
Especially if it's, you know, commercials in the regarding healthcare, right? You'd be knowledgeable on the topic.
Exactly. So you could do voiceovers for videos or whatever for healthcare providers.
Yeah.
Right? If they want to do a Facebook ad that was like all video or so, you could do the voiceover for that. Same thing. It's one of the services that you could offer.
So. Definitely.
I've done 25 of the 100 side gigs on that list, and you know, some of them are good, some of them not so much.
Yeah.
But of the 25, I've really narrowed it down to like the top 8 or so that I felt like were really lucrative and I'm still doing to this day. And that's what I've kind of put in the book to really focus down on and what I go over in the masterclass to kind of show you. I'm doing all 8 and here's the results. So, you know, you don't have to do all 8. You can do 1 or 2 and be very successful, if not more.
Yeah. Successful. Yeah. F. Scott, are you the Mike Rowe of physical therapy?
I think so. I think it's very possible. I've called myself a polymath, you know, for a long time because I just like to dabble in so many things and I find things just interesting and I like to learn about them.
Yeah.
And that's really helped open my eyes to seeing outside the box. And, you know, dirty jobs is one thing, but we're taking it to a new level. We're looking for filthy money jobs now at this point.
Yeah, dirty money.
Yeah, we went to school for a long time to put our knowledge to good use, so we might as well get paid for it.
Yes, yeah. And it's tough, too, because, you know, you look at the landscape, and of course you could look at it that with the negative lens of reimbursement isn't matching. The salary isn't the return on investment isn't there, but also it's 2020 and we have the most opportunity to make something happen. And
yeah, absolutely.
I know Gary Vaynerchuk is a big, this is one of his favorite lines of, if you're struggling in 2020, then you must really suck.
Yeah.
Right. And that's hard to hear. You know, but there's so much opportunity there. And it, like you said, it's just kind of putting in the hard work.
Right. And I'm not looking to run people down and make them work 80 to 100 hours a week and burn them out. Like, that's not what this is about. I currently probably work close to 70 hours a week, you know, but I love it. That's the thing. The 30 hours outside of work are so much fun. And I love doing that stuff that it's not really like work to me. It's like a hobby. It's fun. Yeah. And I get paid for it handsomely.
Yeah.
So you know, that's what I'm trying to do, is find your passion and let's ignite that. You know, I mean, the hobbies, the things you love to do, the weird talents that you have. Mm-hmm. Let's connect that to somebody who needs, you know, something done or something answered or a problem solved. Yep. Connect A to B and you're good. You're good to go. You've got a business. It's going to be profitable. Just run with it.
When you say it like that, it's, you know, simple. Don't let the shiny object syndrome in your way.
Yeah. And it took me about 10 years to create what I call the feel good method in the book. It's a play on my last name, which is very clever on my behalf, but
it's good. It's good.
Realistically, to make it as simple as I just put it,
yeah,
took me 10 years to get to that point and to recognize what I was doing and how I was like organizing it, you know, and that's actually way harder to do than it seems.
Yeah.
And some people just need help seeing outside of themselves, you know?
It's also comforting to, you know, hear somebody like you say, hey, this is a 10-year process that even though it seems like, you know, an overnight success or like, here's my website here, I have all these streams of revenue, especially the new grad like me, it's like, oh shit, like I don't have this going on. I'm so far behind, but it's that slow build, right? That you just gotta let shit marinate.
This has been a process. I mean, especially, heavy the last 3 years. I mean, the first 10 years, I was still trying to figure myself out as a clinician. What setting do I want? Yeah. Oh, shoot, I'm married. I have a family. I need to get benefits. You know, I punched a clock 9 to 5 for 5 or 6 years of my career. That's all I did. I looking back, I've really probably wasted those first 5 or 6 years of my career. I elevated. I went from, you know, staff clinician to manager to, you know, manager of a bigger clinic to like, but it wasn't like effort. It wasn't like hard work, like grinding. It was just like showing up and doing the right thing. And I just happened to be better than the average guy at doing that. You That's know, it's like, it, yeah. So I screwed it up for many a year. And then the last 3 or 4, like I said, really put the pedal down once I saw what had to be done, the bigger picture. And then, like I said, it became almost a game to me. It was like, all right, let's see what we can do. Let's see how far we can stretch the boundaries yes. of what physical therapists can do. And, you know, I'm still not done learning. I mean, shoot, every time I run a course or a masterclass or anything like that, or a webinar, I'm learning stuff every day. I learn from people on those courses and webinars and stuff. So I'm usually never the smartest person in the room, and I'm okay with that.
That's how it should be. Yeah.
Yep. I learn something new every day, man, from these people, especially the new grads that are bringing out all the technology and everything to the forefront with social media. So I appreciate mm-hmm. you guys. It keeps me fresh and young and trying to keep my finger on the pulse.
Yeah. So what does a week look like for you right now? Like a weekly breakdown of your time management?
Yeah, so I've started getting up at 5 a.m. and doing the Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. That's pretty cool. That's a okay. book you guys should check out. It's basically silence or meditation, affirmations that you say out loud, visualization where you close your eyes and kind of visualize how your day is going to go and what you're going to do, what you're going to accomplish, yeah, exercise, powerful. Exactly, exercise, and then reading. So I do that for an hour in the morning. By 6 to 7, I'm usually shooting off a couple of emails and outbound marketing stuff for my digital media agency. 7 o'clock, I'm hitting the shower and getting my daughter ready for school, drop her off. I usually head and do my home health stuff from about 8 to 4, mm-hmm. something like that, 5, 6, just depends on any given week. Head home, play with the kids, eat dinner till about 8. We put them to bed. And then, 8 till whenever my wife passes out, I'm hanging out with her. And she's usually in bed and passed out by 9. So. She's pretty exhausted by the end of the day. So by 9 to 12, those 3 hours, I generally will use as needed, whatever needs to get done task-wise. Yeah. If I need to shoot some emails back, write up a marketing campaign real quick and fire that off. I try not to go to midnight, usually 10, 11.
Yeah, that's a long-ass day, bro.
Yeah, no, and it's not every day, right? I mean, it's just as needed. Like, you know, I could shoot off 5 days worth of outbound marketing and get 2 or 3 replies that are worth anything. Yeah. And then I address those 2 or 3. And sometimes, you know, because I do home health and I drive long commutes in Texas every once in a while, I can take a 30-minute phone call on the road and work through a marketing campaign on that and get it started. So I do have, there's some benefits and flexibility to the home health gig. That's why, you know, like I said, it's not the end of the world for as far as a 9 to 5 goes.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah. So it's usually you're sandwiching the 40-hour hustle. It's like more like right when you wake up before you go to bed. That's when you devote the time for those side hustle tasks, right?
You got it. Yeah, man. A couple, an hour or so in the morning, an hour or two in the evening. And, that's all that really needs to get done. I mean, weekends sometimes can be a little bit crazy. I may have a project that takes me, 3 or 4 hours, and that'll just leave to the weekend usually. But for the most part, I try to keep it so that I'm never overbooked.
Yeah. That's tough. But balancing act.
Exactly. And in order to do that, I would probably need to scale and start hiring some folks. And I think this year I'm finally going to be able to do that. I think I'm bringing my wife on to do the books and some outbound marketing. And then, I'll probably look towards the VA, some VAs to do some side gigs for me, show them the way I want it done, set it up, and then as jobs come in, just push it through them. But I want as much control as I can too. You know, it's, I try to keep it a one man gig to just show people you can do this by yourself as well. Like, you know, I'm not going to hit seven figures by myself, but I've already hit, you know, six pretty well. So
nice,
you know, focus on that and see how big I can get that before I have to move on to the next hiring process.
Yeah. Heck yeah, man. That's always an interesting thing. Like when you have, you seem like you have a lot of systems going, but you know, as one person, you can only take that so far.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that. I know that. Yeah. Again, I'm not trying to strike it rich and get super big with this. This is let's pay down those student loans, you know, 140,000. Yep. I paid 10 off so far. These next 2 years, I'm looking to pay 50 and 50.
Yeah.
Or 40 and 60 if I have to, something like that, and then be done with it. Man, 25 years down to 3 years. That's what I'm looking to do. That's the mission I'm on. I'm looking to help 222 academicians get those student loans paid off quicker. You know, and it's a random number, but it's the approximate number of PT schools that were active by the time I started the book. So I want to help at least one professor from every PT school in the nation pay off their student loans quicker.
Boom. Yep. It's a beautiful goal. We need it. We need the help.
Yeah. Now, if I help a couple others along the way, that's fine too.
Yeah. But heck yeah.
That's my phase one goal, at least, is to try to hit at least every PT school.
Yeah.
One professor from every PT school, and then we'll add to that little by little as we go.
Let's get you doing some guest lectures, man.
That's what I think is going to start happening. I think 2020 is going to be all about the guest lecture.
Hit the circuit. The
book will be out, and that's an easy read. It'll be up on Kindle this week, and then the soft cover version will be available next week. So
awesome.
It'll be an easy read. And like I said, if anybody wants to work with me beyond that, the master class will be up. It starts in February, the beta version, the first run of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll do three of those every year, three cohorts a year.
Yeah.
Probably be something like February, June, and October, I think. It's 8 week courses. So three times a year is about all I can handle. 10 to 20 students. We'll see how that goes. And then, again, I'll probably have to scale there and hire some people to teach my program for me at some point. So
that'll be cool. That's yet another side hustle that you can add to the list. That's 101.
You got it, man. You got it. We'll just keep them rolling.
Yeah. Well, Scott, I don't want to keep you too long. I know you got to wake up at 5 a.m. tomorrow. So maybe one more question for you. If you could give a new grad or a student one piece of financial advice moving forward in this current PT landscape, what would that be?
Yeah, I would say, you know, PT should only just be the tip of our iceberg. You know, I've been beating this drum for a couple years now. Like, we have such a skill set and a knowledge base that even if you never saw a patient for the rest of your life as a physical therapist, you could do so many things with it.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind, right? Again, try to connect point A to point B. Think outside the box and don't be limited. Don't be, you know, like caged by reimbursement levels and, you know, insurance companies. I'm not saying you have to go start a cash pay concierge place. I'm just saying if the insurance is going to be what it is and it's going to keep going down and reimbursements are going to be what they are, that's fine. So be it. But don't stay confined to that. Find other jobs and other gigs and other things that you can do with your knowledge and your skill set that's going to pay way more than a physical therapist would.
Yeah.
You know, a salary for a physical therapist would.
Leverage. That word comes to mind, right?
That's the key. You nailed it. The key word is leverage. You know, I mean, that's all I'm doing with my educational doctorate. I'm leveraging that to help other healthcare practitioners create online courses to sell to the general public or to other clinicians. Yeah. I'm leveraging my knowledge and my skill set in building curriculum and courses to still be able to use my educational doctorate just outside the box, right? It's not in academia. It's not teaching. It's showing others how to create courses and content online. All I'm doing there is leveraging. I'm saying, hey, look, I've got a pretty good idea how to do this stuff. I've done it a bunch of times. If you want my help, here's my services, you know? So it's just about how you leverage the degree. You know, the doctor behind the name is nice and all, but again, what are you doing to leverage that?
That's huge. You know? That is such a great takeaway point, man. F. Scott, thank you so much. And give us another plug of where we can find all the book and the masterclass.
Yeah, man. PTEducator.com.
How people can reach you.
Is going to be your starting point. I mean, that's the blog, that's the website. It's got all my social media handles. Pretty much everything these days is at PT Educator. The list of income streams is going to be at PTEducator.com/100. The book, I'll have to shoot you a link probably a little later this week. I don't have a direct link to that yet, but the masterclass is at PTEducator.com/masterclass. That'll be up and live the 15th of January. So,
heck yeah.
Absolute pleasure talking with you, man. I always love getting together and chatting with the Duck Legs guys. It's
for sure. F. Scott.
Been a long time coming, man.
I can't wait to do another HCT Duck Legs collab.
I know we need to, because I just in case those episodes never see the light of day, we need a revival. We need a reunion, because those were some really good fireside chats that we did with you on our podcast and us on your podcast. It was a good dynamic. We had a great conversation.
We'll bring it back. We'll bring it back. Are you going to CSM?
Undetermined at the present time. I'm not sure yet. Still got some family obligations we're trying to work through. So cool. We'll see. I don't know. If not, next year for sure, I think is going to be, you know, most of my conferences, I think, are going to be next year, but we'll see.
Awesome. Well, yeah, hit me up. I'll be there.
Absolutely, man. I can't wait to get back in touch with you guys and hang out again and, you know, just talk about the finer points of business and education and physical therapy and what we have in our future.
And leveraging those skills.
Yep, absolutely, man.
All right, F. Scott, you have a good night.
You too, bud.
Go Tigers.